Speramus meliora resurgit sin eribus. In case your high school Latin was non-existent or very rusty, that means we hope for better things. It shall rise from the ashes. Father Gabriel Richard wrote those words after a tremendous fire in 1805, a fire that destroyed most of Detroit. Those words from that French-Canadian priest became the motto of the city, a city with a history filled with many different kinds of fires. Michael Jackman spells out this fiery history in his story for the Metro Times. What drew you to this topic?
Well, it was a special issue that we were all contributing to about fire, whether it be the state of fire today or arson. And as I began thinking about my knowledge of Detroit history, which is a pet subject of my own, I started thinking of all the instances in which fire sort of flares up in the city's history. And I don't think there's any other city that I know of that has quite the relationship with fire that Detroit does.
Well, you actually start your piece with what I thought was a really terrific image, and you ask us, as your readers, to imagine a time-lapse image of Detroit's 313-year history. What would we see?
Well, you'd see a city burning down, building itself up again, burning down again, and burning itself up when the fires rage out of control at several instances. Most famously in the Great Fire that's referenced in the city's flag. And I started to think, is there any city that has the image of itself on fire in its own flag?
Good point. And you point out in your story, as well as that big fire in 1805, that the late 1800s and early 1900s brought a lot of different blazes in the city. In fact, I never knew until I saw your story that the bridge to Belle Isle burned.
Yes. That's sort of a byproduct of just the enormous amount of lumber that was produced in the state of Michigan in the 19th century. Billions of board feet. Much of that went into building a city largely made of wood. And after the Great Fire that burned it completely to the ground, it's almost too tempting to ask fate to leave all those structures standing. The Great Opera House Fire of 1897, the Belle Isle Bridge Fire of 1915, this is a time when many of the city's streets were paved with wood and pitch and flammable, with people throwing lit cigars down on them all the time.
So the streets can burn.
The streets could literally catch fire in late 19th century Detroit.
Now, in your piece for the Metro Times, you look at other types of fires in Detroit's history, and some of those fires offer and illustrate progress and prosperity, and some of them illustrate racial divides and hatred. Let's start with the progress and prosperity view of fires. And you very rightly point to Detroit's days of the arsenal of democracy in World War II.
Yes, there's a great book by Harriet Arnold called The Dollmaker about a Southern family that moves up to Detroit in the 1940s for war work. And she describes this unearthly glow that'll be cast by the foundries that are running full tilt all night long. You know, you have the refineries and the factories that are burning off waste products on the top of their stacks. You have this city that is not only casting these machines in fire, but they're going to go somewhere else and in an act of war, set someplace else on fire. Then there's the literal fire that powers Detroit's key contribution to the world, the automobile, which is literally powered by fire. You don't think about it often,
no.
But billions of controlled explosions are sending people coursing down the city's roads and freeways. So from the humble piston to the boiler to the foundry and refinery, you get this image of a city that has a very special relationship with fire.
And it's shown in the city's art.
It's right. It's referenced in the famous Detroit industry murals by Diego Rivera. And I would argue that the spirit of Detroit, he's holding something in his hand, it's sending out rays of light, looks very much to me like a burning star.
Interesting. And then to the racial tensions. And I'd like you to take us back to before what you point out as the 12th Street riot. You tell us, fueled by race hatred, Detroit's fires were burning long before the smoke clouds of 1967. How far back, Michael?
Well, by the official record, 1863. In 1863, an unfortunate rumor that turned out to be unfounded set off a rather ugly riot in which the city's white residents sort of went marauding into the black section of town and burned down 30 buildings, leaving dozens of people homeless. Or you could also think about the race riot of 1943, which is much less discussed, where, again, rioting crowds of white people were pulling black motorists out of their automobiles, tipping them over on Woodward, and setting them on fire. We have a long and particularly ugly legacy of that in Detroit, and it's something that isn't much discussed, even though people will remember the fires of 1967, but the record seems to end there.
Yes, yes.
For probably reasons of convenience of conscience.
Having just cleared Halloween, we have to talk about Detroit's history of Devil's Night fires. I remember covering these in the 1990s, and you had people coming from all around the world to photograph Detroit firefighters as they raced from one blaze to the next on Devil's Night. And you point out the record was more than 800 fires on one night, October 30th, 1984. Now, this year's fire count, 93 fires over 3 days at the Halloween period, and that's the same as last year. Does it seem that that Devil's Night arson fest has finally come to an end?
It seems that way. You certainly have community groups and a number of vigilant volunteers out there to make sure that the vacants don't get burned, that they aren't leaving behind these burned-out eyesores that then have to be torn down. As I understand it, the 4th of July now exceeds Devil's Night in the amount of fires in the city of Detroit. But for those who remember it in the 1980s, it was sort of an eerie night where you could smell the smoke of all the fires burning from just almost any point in the city. When you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of individual fires, it's also very easy to perhaps commit a bit of insurance fraud or yeah, settle a score with an unwanted neighbor and get off scot-free, perhaps. So that was a very strange time. Now the people who are watching have more or less turned it into a community event where people come together to protect buildings, which is sort of interesting. Some good things do come out of the fires.
You do point that out. Good things can come in the aftermath of a fire.
That's right. For instance, after the great fire that touches off the 19th century in Detroit, you have Judge Augustus Woodward is able to implement his fanciful street grid plan inspired by L'Enfant's design for Washington. In the wake of the 1863 fire and riot, Detroit reacts by forming a police force. So there are movements in the direction of progress that come out of it, and well, maybe what Richard wrote is true. If we hope for better things, we will rise again from the ashes.
And how do you think Detroit will rise from the ashes of the bankruptcy and the crisis that it's been going through?
Well, it's hard to say exactly what's going to happen. I suppose that, like many people, I would like my own crystal ball to gaze into. But certainly, it doesn't hurt that that phoenix-like nature is embedded right within the city's motto and its flag, and we would hope that it would come out and build itself up again.
Michael, thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure.
Michael Jackman is managing editor of Detroit's Metro Times, and his story is Motor City Burning. No city has fire flaring up in its history quite like Detroit.